News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
I'm John Gormley. Welcome to Midweek Wednesday. Thank you so much for checking in here. After that deep freeze of the last few weeks, just like anybody who would complain about Justin Trudeau buying donuts, come on, find something else to complain about. Maybe I put you in the same category if you are now whinging that it's too warm. Things are slushy. You have to buy more windshield washer fluid. Lest I remind you that it was just days ago, the wind chill was minus 54. This is our kind of winter. And if Greta could deliver us at least 4 degrees warmer every winter, I'd give that kid the Nobel Peace Prize. Lots of stuff on the go here today. The hour of the big stories coming up. We are going to be checking in at 9 o'clock with Police Chief Evan Bray of the Regina Police Service, who said yesterday, I feel like without choosing sides right now, both sides are essentially holding the city hostage a little bit. Well, I'm not sure the co-op refinery employer is holding anybody hostage. They're just trying to run the refinery. But what has been a significant amping up of the labor dispute, the employees of Unifor, you remember 90% plus of them voted to go on strike. They were serving their strike notice. The employer locked them out on December the 4th. And now you've got Jerry Diaz, the head of Unifor nationally, rolls back into town Monday. Was it a coincidence the weather got nicer Monday? He should have been here when it was minus 40 or worse. But Diaz was here yesterday with us on the show and basically said, it is the opinion of the courts, and he chooses not to accept it, that they can prevent the union from basically locking down the entire refinery. You remember Mr. Diaz, Monday morning, here were his comments.
My message to the co-op management. On December the 5th, you locked our members out strictly as a result of corporate greed. So I'm here to say to you publicly that on January the 20th, you are officially locked out yourself.
All right, so that was the position. Monday night, there were arrests. Mr. Diaz and 13 others taken into custody, released shortly after he was charged with mischief. Yesterday, they doubled down. The union actually had double rows of wire fencing. They have now taken cars and removed the wheels, and they have them all up on blocks, actually blocking all of the entrances to the refinery. And they're doing an I dare you. So today, a number of national union leaders, head of QP, head of other big unions, they're all flying in, along with about 700 Unifor members around the country who have been flown in at Unifor's expense to bolster the picket line. So this thing is really amped up. When I was wondering why the police department and even, frankly, Queen's Bench Court, which has issued one injunction and directed the police to enforce it now, is it acceptable in Canadian labor law, or for that matter, the criminal law, to completely obstruct a business? Before this, there were three incidents of secondary picketing. Remember where they actually blocked off an entire co-op home center? They put up fence around an entire city block and wouldn't let anybody come in? Well, I thought of Howard Levitt, senior partner at Levitt LLP, a much published author. He has practiced labor and employment law in every province in this country. We find Howard Levitt in Toronto this morning. Howard, good to have you by.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, you've done these sorts of issues before. You've been involved in lots of injunction applications. Does the union have the right to actually shut down this refinery?
No, it does not. Excuse me, early morning here. It does not have the right to shut down the refinery. It has to allow, it can give information picketing, it can stop vehicles for maybe 5 minutes each, but then it has to let everybody in. It cannot stop them. If it does, that's, well, it's a breach of the injunction, it's a breach of the law.
What happens in a situation where the injunction is flagrantly breached? Is the onus on the employer to go back and get the court to clarify it or start suggesting contempt of court might be in order?
Well, it's up to the employer to go back and say, I want X, Y, and Z put in jail. If that's what it takes, I want the police to come in and clear a path. And if the police think it's too dangerous to clear a path, then all the more reason to lay charges and all the more reason to enforce the injunction. But if injunctions are allowed to be willy-nilly ignored, then that's a contempt of the law, which the court should not countenance for a heartbeat. And nor should the employer.
Mr. Dias,
the employers just won't do anything.
So why would employers not do anything?
Well, they're afraid of labor relations. They're afraid of potential boycotts. They're afraid of their members when they go back. They're afraid that if the members go back in those circumstances, the members will then proceed to disrupt internally or sabotage them. They're afraid of consequences. They're afraid of tougher collective agreement negotiations next time or even this time. Those are the kinds of reasons why employers sometimes do nothing. It's never with my recommendation when I act for clients, but indeed, lots of employers just don't have the fortitude to do what they have to do and what they should do and what the courts allow them to do.
Jerry Diaz, just last September, was found in contempt of court. There was a strike in Windsor. Exactly the same thing happened. Unifor came in, put barricades around the struck business, and the court was pretty clear. $10,000 fines every single day the fence stays up for the union, $1,000 for the five people they found in contempt. I'm surprised that the Saskatchewan case hasn't gotten to that yet.
Well, maybe the employer didn't ask for that remedy. Maybe it's time for them to ask for that remedy. I don't know. Maybe their law firm was more timorous. I don't know what the circumstances are. But now that it's being so wholeheartedly disobeyed, maybe it's time to impose more significant sanctions like those or jail for the leaders.
Howard Levitt, well-known Canadian labor lawyer in Toronto this morning. So I'm curious how the police handle this. I mean, clearly the police are in the business of keeping the peace. They try assiduously to say, you know, we're being even-handed, this and that. But, you know, even when the police chief says, well, both sides are a little bit holding the city hostage, how do police organizations have to manage this? Or in many ways, are they driven by the court injunction as well?
Well, they're supposed to be driven by the court injunction. I found police to be generally very unhelpful. Maybe it's because they're union brothers themselves in most cities, and probably in this one, they just don't want to get involved. They want to be on everyone's side and on no one's side. But they're supposed to enforce the court injunctions. That's their job. That's their duty. And politics should not enter into it at all, although it, albeit too often, does.
Unifor is the largest non-government union in the country, based overwhelmingly in your hometown in Ontario and Toronto. Out here, the co-ops have very strong acceptance. I mean, on the prairies alone, there's 1.9 million co-op members just in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Alberta. So there's a lot of this talk about, well, Unifor's doing it the Toronto way. Is there something to this idea of really aggressive fence building? Is that something that you see in Ontario more often?
Well, Ontario is, frankly, and I'm in Toronto, is not particular. Was not a union town, to put it mildly. Do I find Ontario to be more aggressive? No, I think that BC and Quebec are the two most aggressive pro-union bastions, where they tend to be more aggressive and violent, not particularly in Ontario.
I'm just curious, because I found exactly the same thing. BC and Quebec, and even, you know, the legislative regime in those provinces indicates a good bit of that. But I just don't know how it is that, you know, we don't usually build fences around buildings here and businesses. And I'm just curious if this is kind of in the MO of Unifor.
Look, the Unifor has just doubled. It's merged as a union. It's bigger than it used to be. It's now the biggest, as you say, private sector union. Of course, the public sector unions aren't really used to strikes. They often are just have mandatory arbitration. They're trying to show they're the biggest and toughest. And don't think it's not an organizing drive. It's the way if you want to protect your members, you come to Unifor. If you're not happy, you're just a union, go to Unifor. So, and if they can get away with it, why not? Because that's their business. But somebody's got to break that business model. And hopefully this company will do just that by going to the court and enforcing their injunction, asking for more severe sanctions quickly, not let days go by.
This was, I think, the curiosity, because finally the police did something Monday night. All day yesterday, the company sat on its hands and watched like the rest of the province, and there's an indication they'll do the same today.
Well, they've got to look. If a company is going to be successful, They have to be seen. They've got to do what Unifor is doing. They've got to be seen to be proactive and aggressive and act in a way that gives the message that they can't be pushed around. They're not going to be pushed around. They're going to win. You got to be. If you're in a strike, you've got to be in a strike to win, not to lose. And so far, it seems like they're in a strike to lose, not to win.
Is there?
And by the way, a lot of companies and my clients tend to stay open during a strike. Hard to stay open for 700 picketers outside, but generally, you invite your people to participate. You invite replacement workers. If enough of your people won't, eventually, and allows the cessation that, well, this strike can go on a long time because the company's continuing to operate. If they do anything that's violent, then people go to jail. If they actually obstruct, as they're doing here, people get police come and intervene, or you get an injunction, you start imposing big fines, or eventually people go to jail. But you keep operating. Companies have a right to keep operating during the strike. And then unions getting a message, then you get a formal, they will capitulate.
In a case like this, and last question, and you've alluded to it, is there a big battle for hearts and minds outside the union environment? I mean, to the vast majority of the public who don't have a dog in the hunt?
Well, there always is, depending on how much the company in question depends upon retail public as their market. In those cases, there's always a battle for hearts and minds because the union is trying to paint the company as badly as possible, and ultimately that damages the company. Ultimately, that damages the livelihood of its members who work at that company, because if it does it well enough, companies won't survive. And the company is, of course, wanting to appeal to the public, so if it takes tough, tough measures against the striking members and the picketers in this case, the people will say good for you rather than the opposite. And that may be another reason for their timorousness. Maybe they think if they take too tough a position, Saskatchewans will be unhappy. Don't know.
Howard Levitt in Toronto. Always great getting connected with you. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Howard Levitt is the senior partner of Levitt LLP, one of the country's deans of employment and labor law practices in most provinces. And you can see Howard, he takes a very hard line on this. The law is laid out by the court injunction from Queen's Bench Court. People who are flouting the law, people who are promoting the blockading of a legitimate business, should be put in jail. People who are creating violence on the picket line should be held in jail even longer. So that is the context as we enter what is becoming a doubling down week. You heard the Unifor national executive yesterday, the secretary treasurer of the union, saying this was going to be the stand. They were going to bring in national union leaders. They're doing that today. They are going to face down Federated Co-op, bracket, a.k.a. the law in Saskatchewan and what the courts have laid out, close bracket. So I don't know about you, but I'm not real comfortable living in a place where a union out of Toronto decides how the law gets applied. I'm John Gormley. Evan Bray, Police Chief Regina, here 9 o'clock, the hour of the big stories. Oh, and by the way, there's a trial underway in the U.S. It's a pretty significant one. There's only been 3 in history. The Senate to try and impeach President Trump. I think you know how this is going to turn out. It's been predicted from the beginning. We'll talk more about that, too. This is 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm John Gormley. We wish Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, nothing but the best. It appears they are staying in that beautiful oceanfront mansion owned by Frank Giestra, the billionaire, in Victoria. Are they going to stay there for good? Are they going to get a place in Canada? We don't know. But Harry began his life the other night when he flew in on WestJet. Just pretty cool. Pretty average. Except the SUV that pulled up to the plane on the tarmac and the 2 big burly security guys get off and then Harry gets off. A little different for him rather than the dull normals like you and I. But at the Liberal cabinet retreat in Winnipeg, the Liberals are still saying nothing about who is paying security. I mean, we wish them the very best. Get on with your life. Look after your own affairs. But will the Canadian government offer some security? Costs, expenses underwritten. We'll learn more about that. Okay, so the province has been dragged in to the labor dispute. The premier issues a statement yesterday, as does the Minister of Labor, saying what both sides are saying, the best agreement is always reached at the bargaining table. So Unifor and the employer could get back to bargaining. Police chiefs here next, though, Evan Bray on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.